Hello and welcome to the Catbird Speaks, a White Sox podcast from Baseball Prospectus. I am your host and an editor for Baseball Prospectus. My name is Nick Schaefer. Joining me this evening for a breaking news podcast, as it were, are two BP contributors and lovely individuals. I'm going to start with Dr. 100 himself, Dr. Mark Primiano. Mark, how are you?
Pretty good. It's I wish we had something happier to discuss. My first podcast actually being back in Chicago.
Yeah, I've noticed that ever since you moved back to Chicago, the White Sox haven't made any positive moves here. Just throwing that out there, and not entirely true.
They added a couple guys that are middling.
Woof. All right. Also from the five boroughs of New York City and throwing a duffel bag down a flight of stairs, it sounds like, is Frank Furke. How you doing, Frank?
Pretty good, and I'm pretty sure that was Marcus the duffel bag. So
that is Maya sprinting around the house.
The official dog of the podcast?
The official dog of the podcast.
There's a lot of competition for the cat of the podcast, I would think.
Yeah, Maya's got dog by herself.
Yeah, just by default, even.
Yeah.
So it is, gosh, it's February 19th. I returned to my office from a deposition, sat down, and one of the big dominoes finally fell after an absurdly long off-season wait where two unprecedented, young, crazy good free agents were seemingly not budging. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado signed with the Padres for what seems like a pretty simple deal. I don't know how the money's distributed, but it's as far as we know, it's 10 years, $300 million with an opt-out after five, which seems pretty clean and easy to me. But this was newsworthy to a White Sox podcast because the White Sox for a long time were considered the favorite, again, like Maya, sort of by default, although I don't mean to damn Maya with faint praise like that.
She's smiling. She doesn't care.
All right. Well, Machado was apparently scooped out from under the White Sox with a deal that's a bargain and basically what people were projecting for him before the offseason. So I'm going to flip it to Frank first. Frank, where do you want to start with this disaster?
The fact that they this time actually bothered talking up a big game before not delivering instead of, I guess it's a change of pace from, I guess the most recent time all this happened was 2016 when they didn't even bother talking about, like they never bothered sort of like leading the rumor mill for any of the free agents that they then didn't sign. And so on the one hand, it's good to mix it up. And on the other hand, the end result is still that they haven't signed anybody for more than Jose Abreu's $68 million. And they haven't signed a top of the market free agent since Albert Bell, which was in when I was in first grade.
Yeah, and that Bell deal.
I'm a man now. I'm 40. I'm not 40.
Yeah, and that Albert Bell deal had it was like there were options. He had to stay like a top five paid player throughout it, but that just turned into like if the White Sox didn't feel like keeping pace with the market, they could just release the contract. So he wound up playing for 2 years and then going
right,
elsewhere.
Which they somehow got that in his deal. They got the diminished skills stuff in Thomas's deal, so I don't know why it was that anybody agreed to that, but it was a weird time, I guess the mid-90s.
I mean, I can get Albert Bell agreeing to that deal where it's like, hey, I'm no longer a top five paid guy. You have to let me go become a top five paid guy because he was an absolute monster then, and even in his 2 years with the Sox, it was just like, oh, this is just a ridiculous baseball beast of a human coming off a year where you lead the league in OPS with 1055, and it's like, oh, I'm no longer top five paid. Yeah, I'm not gonna have any trouble getting that money right back. So
he didn't have any trouble, I don't think. I think
he got Baltimore to pony right up right before his body fell apart.
Yeah. So yeah, for once it sounds like what was really frustrating to me, I mean, there's a million incredibly frustrating things about this. This is about as irritated as I've been as a White Sox fan in a long time, and that's saying something. It does seem like they were the leaders to get Machado, but it seemed more through, you know, being the only option. It seemed like there was a lot of apathy from the rest of the market, and like, yeah, the White Sox were willing to go to a decent, you know, they were willing to offer what would have been one of the biggest contracts in Major League history, but given revenues and given their payroll, it was kind of like they had no excuse not to, and they still would have gotten great value. It's just apparently I don't know where they were at before. You know, there were rumors about them being at 7175 and 8220. And then apparently last night, Monday night, the White Sox went to 8 years and 250 with a whole bunch of incentives, investing options where it could get up to as high as 350. Mark, I think you just said that they refused to offer an opt-out.
Yeah, the tweet by Bruce Lane just came through, saying White Sox offer to Machado changed on Monday. GM Rick Hahn said he had a restless night of waiting. The Sox offer did not have an out clause. The organization does not believe in that philosophy.
Oh, my God. Okay, so...
Which, if you want to say the organization does not believe in that philosophy, congrats on just announcing that you will never sign a top free agent.
Yeah, I mean, this is like... I mean, I can't think of a single premier free agent who didn't have an opt-out in his deal in the last, like, 5 years.
Did Darvish have one
with the Cubs?
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is, I mean,
obviously, like, Manny Machado is a 26-year-old position player, and Yu Darvish has had arm trouble and is a pitcher. But
yeah,
I
don't know if
through big deals recently.
I don't know if 6 years, 125, even like really counts as like a crazy big deal at this point. I'm thinking of Price. I'm thinking of Hayward. I'm thinking of A-Rod. I'm thinking of Sabathia. I guess like some of the older guys, like I don't think like Pujols or maybe like, you know, I don't think like the guys in their late 30s maybe did. Like, I don't think Pujols did. I don't think Scherzer does. So
Darvish can opt out after this year.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But that's like they basically said they weren't willing to go to 300 guaranteed, and that's what Machado wanted for obvious reasons. There have been some people saying that he left money on the table to go to San Diego, but, you know, there's no way 250 guaranteed is as much as 300 guaranteed. We've seen, you know, I think we've seen players with vesting options get manipulated by the team so they don't reach them in recent memory. I don't know why Machado would want to take on that risk, that if he got hurt or had an erosion of skills into his mid-30s, that the White Sox could, like, manipulate him out of, a good 20% of the contract. So, yeah, the White Sox refused to make the best offer. And this opt-out thing is, like, classic White Sox idiocy, where they just have these random, like, they have these arbitrary, like, principles about what contracts should be. And they
no more than, what, 5 years for a pitcher?
I think it was 3 years. I think they went to four for a couple of guys, but
some stupid odd number where it was just like, this is ridiculous. Yeah, it had to be 3 years because Danks got five, and that was like earth shattering.
Yeah, and wasn't that like,
well, look where I got them?
Yeah, right. Well, he blew up immediately. That could have been a 3 year deal, and it would have. I mean, they theoretically salvaged some on the back end with it, but man, I mean, this is just so stupid and embarrassing. Like, what on earth, man? This is my reaction like 8 hours later.
It's especially dumb. It's just, you can't tell a fan base that the whole point of the rebuild was building up to something like this. And it's, look at what the Yankees did. Look at what essentially every major baseball team did by not cooking the books, but extensively just going, well, hey, we're saving for this. And then you get there and you go, oh, no, we're not. Things are okay. Like, you can't say, oh, well, we were willing to do $250 million, but not $300 million, when your payroll has been nothing the past 2 years and will be nothing the next eight.
Right. And
who's going to come here after this? It's one of those where the White Sox, as mentioned earlier, are a team that has never put up a contract over $100 million. They are one of the five teams that have not done that. And they very fairly at this point have a reputation as a team that will not pay for big name free agents. So if you're a big name free agent, why even go into discussions with them? Because you know, it's like, well, you're not really going to even be the top offer. You'll never be the top offer. They've never shown any willingness to be the big guy.
I think what's crazy too is that even on the heels of this, that they came out and they were talking a big game about how, oh, well, you know, Han was saying, oh, well, in some ways our deal was, you know, was better and he could have gotten paid more here. And then meanwhile, like at almost the exact same time, Kenny Williams is talking to the press saying, yeah, well, like we weren't going to go to 300. That was something we couldn't do. And it's like, if you're bragging about how the contract is such a like sure thing to get up to like 350 where he's going to make more money, then how is this a better deal? And if you're not going to put an opt out in, like as it stands now, Machado's so young, if they front load that deal, he can get more money in the first 5 years, or maybe the same money as the White Sox were offering, because 8,250 I think is a higher AAV than is higher AAV than 10,300, and then he can opt out at age 31, and still if he's still really good, he could get more. Or if not, he's got the safety of the extra 2 years on the back that aren't a vesting option. Aren't vesting options. There's just no way that's better. So that was horrible. And then Williams said, well, we can't go that high because we have all these guys in-house that we're going to need to pay. And it's that was just like that was absolutely ludicrous to me. Like, first of all, you just burned you pushed Eloy back a year for just on its face ludicrous reasons. Like, there's just That was as close to, I mean, in my opinion, as close to like a bad faith failure to promote a guy in September as I've ever seen. Because, you know, I love Daniel Polka for what he is, but if they're willing to stomach Daniel Polka's defense in a corner, you can stomach Eloy Jimenez's defense in a corner for a month of September and let him face major league pitching. And if you're going to not call him up and say, well, he needs to work on his defense, how is he going to work on his defense if he's not playing? Because the minor league season's over in September. He could have actually played more games and gotten more work in. And I don't know what's different about fielding in a corner in the majors than in AAA. Like, I mean, are the fly balls more skillful? Like, I don't understand. So you do that, you push Eloy out to 2027 or whatever, when who knows what sort of player he's going to be in his at around age 30 anyway. And that's your reason why you can't pay Machado an extra 50, you know, 2 years in 2027, 2028. That's why. That's the reason.
Well, hell, whoever they draft.
Well, I come from this.
But if his options vest, you'd pay him more. Okay, cool.
Where I come with this also is you're talking about, you know, $50 million over a 9 or 10 year contract is what, $5 million a year, and you can either view it as a couple extra years, in which case their payroll, if they added Machado right now, would still be below what the 2011 payroll.
Oh yeah, by about $30 million.
And so, like, you could either, you look at this two ways. Either you can take the $30 million hit for two more years, think about that RSN money, or you can add $5 million a year. You can think of it either way. And if you think about it as $5 million a year, then, like, you know, what are they spending $5 million on? Like, who are they spending $5 million on this year? Who's some guy who's up in arbitration or some one of their, right? Like, how much are they paying Ivan Nova this year?
He's like nine. Nova's somebody who you actually could kind of, like, obviously not.
I'm not negging Ivan Nova. I see
where you're going with this, but, and obviously, like, you tell Nova to pound sand if he's the difference between, like, getting Machado or not, but, like, you signed John Jay for 1 year, $4 million.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that, like, where they ran into the problem the last time they had a team with any talent on it was that they needed too many guys who were going to cost a little bit too much there, and they didn't have any depth. And they've got a zillion outfielders in the minor league system, and if they're not willing to find, and if they're talking about a team that's going to be hamstrung from contention because they're $5 or $6 million short, then A, they totally botched the farm system, and B, like, I mean, I understand this is Jerry Reinsdorf, but that's just so cheap. Like, $5 million to close off a contender.
It's cheap in like a stupid, it like it's very Reinsdorf because it's not just cheap, it's cheap in like a self-defeating and asinine way. Like,
what, you mean Kyle Korver for a trade exception?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or that Sacramento Kings pick they never got. Who was that for? Oh, well, the Bulls are, I mean, I'm not gonna start talking about the Bulls. I got plenty to, one Jerry Reinsdorf team to yell about is plenty for me tonight. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you were willing to put those vesting options in if you're going to say that you fully intended to pay them and then say, well, they're like, oh, well, we got to round out this team. We got to like have a complete team. And it's like, if you can't pay $30 million free agent when, as Mark said, your payroll commitments after this year are $15 million. It's like, so what? If you had an entire team of guys making the minimum, could you afford him then? Because that's basically where you're at, plus Tim Anderson and 1 year of who am I? Herrera. So that's it. I mean, do you need to trade Herrera to make this work? Because do it. I don't. You know what I mean? Like what?
Yeah, I mean, where this, the other way of reading this is that what they're like, since we, you know, started talking about Reinsdorf and his ownership, is, you know, you start to wonder that as more teams, when they get sold, are getting sold to people who think of them as, you know, financial instruments, and there's this whole thought about not wanting to have, you know, that a big contract is an impediment to a sale. You saw that with the Marlins. There's rumors about that with the Mets. And, you know, Reinsdorf's getting up there. And then the question is his family going to keep the team? And, you know, and you saw this discussion with the Illiches too. And it's like, well, maybe it doesn't really make any sense as to why they'd be worried about selling a team with a $300 million contract instead of a $280 million contract. But it does. Well, like, that's an even more frustrating answer. Is that we're worried we won't be able to sell the team in 5 years.
I mean, now it used to be, oh, you sell a team and you think you're going to see new investment. But now, I mean, the league seems cool with owners leveraging themselves into oblivion. So they're worse off when they, you know, when they actually take over the team. I mean, if the Marlins are any indication, and Houston kind of to an extent, but, I actually don't know if he went into debt for that or if that was just the way they operated, but I think the real lesson here for me is that, not lesson, because this is always something I suspected, but now it's kind of confirms to me, is if they weren't going to sign Machado this offseason with all the other teams that you'd normally suspect to be in backing out for weird reasons, it's never going to happen. It's never, ever, ever going to happen. Ever. The guy's 20. Yeah, I mean, he's 26. Your payroll is never going to be more clear than this. Ever.
It felt like the perfect storm of an off season in that, like you said, it's like, okay, well, the big names aren't going for it. Like the Dodgers weren't interested. The Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs, the big marquee franchises all said pass. And it was like, holy shit. Holy shit, we've got an opening, and it's all going to happen. It's finally lined up, and San Diego outbids you.
Yeah, after you waited for like 4 months, and San Diego basically like just hoping he would take your lowball offer, and San Diego identified, well, shoot, if he's just asking for, if he'll sign for $10,300, and nobody else is going to take him, like, you know, it's like, I remember, you know, I live in Manhattan, and my wife grew up between New York, London, and Tokyo. Those are some of the most expensive cities in the world. And we visited my friend down in New Orleans, Louisiana, and we went to the Walmart there, and Jane had never been to a Walmart before. And we walked in and there was like a 36 pack of bottled water for like a dollar. And it's like, I'm on vacation, but we were both like, I don't even need this, but these items are worth more than they're charging us. Like, we would be fools not to just take them because we'll profit by it. And it's like, I almost feel like that's where San Diego was, where it's just like, well, geez, we weren't planning on this, but if nobody's going to take this bargain of a superstar, like, we'll do it and just figure it out later.
Which is the whole point of having payroll flexibility.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, is that you can, you can swoop on guys where there's an unexpected market, you can make a development, and like
Milwaukee,
you know,
did, like Milwaukee did with Yelich and Kane,
right?
Or, you know, any other, or Machado, like this, where like randomly the market didn't develop.
And on the one hand, I would almost be less irritated if they hadn't been going after him very much all season. Or like before last offseason and at the deadline, and then again, I would almost be less irritating if they had publicly represented that, you know, they have their best prospects, by and large, are infielders, and Machado is an infielder, and they already have people playing those places. And, you know, I would be less frustrated, I think, if that had been their reasoning, because, you know, I don't agree with that. I think having more good players is the right way to build a team, especially, you know, when you have a lot of guys who can play multiple positions the way that basically everyone in their infield can. But that would be less frustrating than the idea that they decided they needed him and then they didn't just close the deal over 3.5 months.
I mean, it could not have played out in a more infuriating fashion. And, you know, because like if San Diego had swooped in at the very beginning, in like November, and just said, hey, here's the 10-300 you wanted, and Machado just went to each bidder and was like, going once, going twice, sold, it would have been frustrating, because even then I still would say, well, hey, the White Sox could and should beat this, because they'd still be like $50 million shy of a league average payroll with that on board. But at the same time, like, they were like pounding their chests and like smugly talking about, to like, you know, to the, you know, chiding the media for leaking, and Han was making all these statements at like Sox Fest about how we're at the big boy table and like we should be taken seriously and all that stuff. And it's like, well, you were the only people in the room for 4 months and you couldn't close the deal, and then you got outbid by the Padres. So, you know, I don't really care if we're supposed to scale down our expectations because it's you guys, but like, this is pretty humiliating.
I mean, hey, if they want to make it up to us, they have, one good outfielder on the team, and he's not technically going to be on the team. And there's a good outfielder that they can go sign if they want to demonstrate it there at the big boy table.
If they won't do opt-outs, why would he? He's not going to do it.
I mean, that's a mocking suggestion. If they weren't going to land the guy where it was a better fit organizationally and it was a better fit, you know, from the roster, and they already were close to it. I'm just joking that, like, you know, if they're going to be at the big boy table, then, you know, what you see a lot of teams do is you miss one guy and you go pick the other one up, right? You can't get one of the big catchers and see you sign one of the other catchers. And
I mean,
obviously, all of that, it's harder to draw any conclusions about what, like, how teams that are trying to win act in the free agent market these days, because that seems to be a null set. But, you know,
I mean,
there's room for them to do it. I never really believed they were going to do it, but I believed it enough to get irritated about it. And now, you know, they could make it up to us. They could just go sign Bryce Harper. They're not going to.
No.
Or they could go sign Keuchel and Kimbrel and Harper and just write a big check, and they're not going to.
I preferred Harper to Machado anyway, and I think we talked about that on a couple of podcasts way back when it was all sort of hypothetical. So, yeah, like, they could turn around and sign Harper and I'd shut up. I mean,
yeah,
but, you know, and I'd happily go back and like be like, you know, based on what I knew at the time, I buried them. But, you know, they showed me. So there's that. But they won't do it. There's also the fact that they waited so long on this Machado nonsense. Like, they just waited forever and wouldn't just meet his demands for reason, because they wanted to get him at 80% of his demand or 90% of his demand instead of 100% of it, just to like, I don't know. Again, I don't know if this is just them being, if Machado had demanded 350, would they have offered three and just held there? I don't know. That feels like a thing they would do. But, regardless, like so many really good position play. Like if you're going to move Moncada to third, which it seems like what they're doing now that they're not getting Machado, or that they were just going to do it anyway because they think he's more comfortable there or he's better there, then there were like what, six all-star second basemen who all signed the exact same cheap as hell contract this winter. Like Brian Dozier, Daniel Murphy, who I don't want them to sign anyway, but Jed Lowry, DJ LeMahieu.
LeMahieu, they could have taken the Cano deal.
Yeah, all these dudes were like, well, but like I just named like four guys who are like all-star second basemen who all signed for basically 2 years and like $20 million. And they could have just done that. They could still sign Keuchel. They could sign, there's like a ton of, they traded for Yonder Alonso instead of just like, they could have signed any number of like, there's like the CJ Cron types who are basically the same dude as Alonso for like less. But they were
They also don't need a guy like that.
or like Nelson Cruz, if you really just wanted to upgrade first base DH for a year, was available. They don't, no, you're right. They don't need a guy like that. But like, regardless, if you're just trying to make your team a better lineup for 2019.
Yeah, I mean, they need a couple starting pitchers, and they need some outfielders that aren't embarrassing.
Like
And
they could
they
assign, they could assign.
embarrassing is strong. But they need like better than half win outfielders because they have a bunch of acceptable to even better than acceptable fourth and fifth outfielders, and nobody better than that except for the guy that they're not going to call up till late April.
Hopefully, I'm hoping they don't hold him down to July for the Super 2 nonsense at this point. Because, but like they could have
That
signed.
seems like beyond even their sense of shame, but
Well, you think they could sign? They could have signed. They could still sign Marwin Gonzalez. They could have signed Andrew McCutchen. They could still sign Adam Jones. To your point about a right, just a right fielder. I didn't love the center field market this winter, but like you could have figured something
they could
out.
have signed Pollock. I mean,
Yeah.
there was a lot of discussion. I mean, yeah, like
Don't get me wrong, he's massively better than Adam Engel, but I just he for some reason if the Dodgers sign him, I assume he's going to hit like 320 and play like the full season. If the White Sox had signed him, I would assume he'd like be totally incapable of handling center anymore and like lose all semblance of power. That's just how I what I would have predicted.
basically a new Darren Erstad.
Yeah, or like a hell, maybe, Melky too.
Yeah, but without the fun.
Yeah, exactly. So like, oh, and Grandal, they missed on that too. Like they could have.
Yeah, and weirdly traded a catcher who was top five hitting catcher in baseball and like not embarrassing. Yeah, right. I mean, they had actually three decent catchers last year, and they got nothing for, I mean, they got an okay reliever and nothing to get in exchange for getting rid of two of them. That's not like very well handled.
No, and
Or
I
like
just
they
the Omar trade makes so much more sense if you get Machado, if you add pieces. Thanks, Maya. If you add pieces that actually make up for, all right, well, we got rid of our catcher, but now that we've added these relievers, we also added a like prime hitting guy. We added this, and it's like, okay, yeah, I get where you're going with this. Whereas now it's just kind of like, yeah, maybe Omar never was going to be the man at catcher because his actual abilities as a catcher are pretty dang terrible. But
There's a good chance he's just a better bat than Yonder Alonso this year, just straight up.
yeah.
Like, fine, don't play him a catcher. Just DH
Yeah.
him. He's still probably, I bet he could handle first. So just,
Yeah.
I don't know how tall he is. I'd
The
have to
only
look.
thing with this tenor of complaints is that I'm envisioning the 2015 team where it's like they went out and they signed Robertson and Cabrera and what Samardzija and then and right and it was like these are areas of need. They've acquired real veterans. They're actually good, and then the team didn't get any better. And so like there is a degree to which I almost feel like there's like what as you said, Nick, like there's some curse where it's just like, you know, if they had signed right, like Machado was gonna just like hit the 20th percentile outcome if they signed him.
He would just be 2017 Machado forever.
Yeah, and right, and like Keuchel's gonna be washed up, and then right, and they're gonna like it is tempting insofar as it's easy to envision everything going poorly for this franchise. Is not that hard to envision the idea that they go out and put $60 million extra dollars on the payroll and go from being a 70 win team to a 75 win team is somehow easy to envision.
Yeah, but like that's true, and they've done plenty of shopping in the middle of the market over the years, but I would suggest that one, they do have a much better farm system when they tried to make that work in the past. So you wouldn't be trying to fill like 100% of your roster with the mid-market guys. You'd just be supplementing.
Well, they don't have any stars right now.
No, they don't. But like you could be the Indians have done so little and that you could put yourself in a position to pounce on them if Lindor has a setback and like Kluber shows his age. You know what I mean? Like, cause they are so stars and scrubs heavy that like any injuries to their main, like four or five guys could just be absolutely devastating. And if you're just sitting there like 10 games back anyway, just because your only additions in the winter were Ivan Nova and Yonder Alonso, then like, again, like there's a huge opportunity cost to dialing your chances of making the playoffs from 10 to 20% down to 0% every freaking year. That's like, that's a meaningful loss. And I think that the middle of the market is like better than and better and more efficient than it's been in forever. Cause like I said, like, you know, I've tweeted this a lot, but like the 2016 White Sox would have killed to have like Brian Dozier available for 2 years and like $9 million apiece. Like that team would have killed to be able to sign Marwin Gonzalez probably for like 3 years, $30 million. You know, like all of these, or even CJ Cron, like all, or Justin Bour, like all, Derek Dietrich just signed a minor league deal. He would have been like, he would have probably put that team over the hump to get them over 500 at the very least. So like,
Man, that's the saddest thing about talking about relitigating the White Sox 2016. This is the second saddest 2016 to relitigate. Is that like for the amount that they were like they were 23-10 and like they totally botched the team construction and then fell off a cliff. But they fell off a cliff to the point where it almost feels like it was pathetic at the time. Their moves were having their pants ripped down in exchange for James Shields and then signing a guy who was hurt. Like,
yep.
Embarrassing then, it's still embarrassing, but in retrospect, feels sort of like rearranging the deck chairs.
Well, no, but like the thing is, if they did that literally this offseason, they could have just signed Wade Miley for $4 million and signed Brian Dozier and CJ Cron and like Adam Jones, and that team makes the playoffs like pretty easily, I think.
Didn't they win like 75 games? I mean, they needed
They won 78 and they tanked for like half the year.
Yeah.
And like the guys you'd be replacing were so like if you could have gotten Grandal on a 1 year deal and replaced Deonor Navarro and Alex Avila with them, that's like 8 wins right there. And I know
the team that had the most the single year with the most good fortune of any team I've ever rooted for just podcast after podcast and column after column from all of us just turns me into a nihilist about this.
Well, I'm going to read
when I have to reflect about it, it's very nihilistic.
I just want to read you a couple sentences from an article I wrote at the end of the 2016 season when it looked like the White Sox were about to tear everything down. Before you disagree, all right. An inability or unwillingness to spend has been one of the major impediments to the White Sox succeeding with this group, referring to the core they had at the time, Sale, Quintana, etc. And there's no reason to believe they'll be more willing to spend in the future relative to the league than they are now. Before you disagree, realize that the White Sox gave 1,487 plate appearances to Dioner Navarro, J.B. Schuck, Avisail Garcia, Jimmy Rollins, Carlos Sanchez, Jerry Sands, Lurie Garcia, and Jason Coates this year. Avisail had an OPS plus of 91 while primarily playing DH. The rest all had an OPS plus between 52 and 77. The 77 is Coates. The 52 is Schuck, who was the primary center fielder on the team. Like, don't tell me that these, like, bargain basement, you know, collusion prices wouldn't have added, like, a dozen wins to that team, and that gets you to 90 games. There's just no way.
I'm just not here for your Lurie slander by including him in that in that list.
Well, as you recall, prior to 2017, Lurie Garcia was not much of a bat. But point taken. Look.
We drink the Lurie slurry.
Yeah, and like that was Carlos Sanchez. We're here with Yolmer Sanchez now. He's a different dude. I just don't know what what is the point? What is the point of tearing down everything? I know what the point is. I know the point is just to make money. Don't act like this is a rhetorical question. But like competitively speaking, if you're going to slash payroll to the bone and say, we're going to build everything from within, where does that money go? Where does it all go? Even if you wanted to spend it to improve the team, like because they were just waiting for Machado, which by the way, even if they had signed him, they had passed on so many other opportunities to make the team better that they still would have probably just won about 76 games or something like that with Machado. So like it still would have been another year under 500. But now that they didn't get him and they've shown no interest in signing any of these other guys who are out there like Marwin or Keuchel or any of these other dudes, like it's the same team as last year.
Yeah. There's no...
The bullpen is better. And other than that, they swapped it. Other than that, they swapped out their own Quad A guys for guys who have been in the league for a long time, but realistically going forward might be Quad A.
So the bullpen,
like John, it's not actually clear that John Jay is better than Nicky Delmonico, Daniel Polka, or Adam Engel. I think he was actually worse than all three of them last year by WAR. He's probably a little bit less likely to crash out, but you have four guys who you can pick one of them and probably they won't crash out. I'm irritated also about adding all the Quad A guys.
Well, yeah, like you traded. I don't see how trading for $9 million Yonder Alonso was better than just, I don't know, give Lucas Duda and Derek Dietrich NRIs and just see who wins the job. Like, how is that better? Like,
the only reason the Alonso trade doesn't bother me is I just don't see Alex Call becoming something that hurts.
Well, like at the time, and maybe they could have
given Alex Call right. Like last year, right? So the Alex Call is just the rehash of the Jake Peter trade or whatever, right? And like that was fine because they got something that seemed like the max they were ever going to get out of Jake Peter, and. Soro was pretty compelling, and they got another guy in there,
Avalon,
too.
Avalon was pretty good, too. No, that deal, no, that's not, I don't care.
Yeah, my point is, that, like, that's what I'm comparing that to. It's like, could they have gotten something more interesting than, even if it's not somebody better than Yonder Alonso, couldn't they have gotten somebody comparably good for Alex Call who makes more sense with the team?
I also don't care about. I wasn't even thinking about Alex Call. I forgot who they even traded for him. I don't think Alex Call is going to really be anything. My thing is that even if you would just say Alonso was a free agent and you signed him to a 1-year $9 million deal, like in this offseason, that would look asinine. Like that's a bad free agent signing in this market. Like let alone trading any player at all. And what makes it even worse is if the rumors are to be believed, and maybe they could have salary dumped him elsewhere, but At the time, the Indians were apparently shopping Kluber because they couldn't afford him. And you helped them salary. You helped them clear salary. I don't know. I mean, am I crazy? Like, is that... Does that see... Like, people freak out about trading in the division. What about, like, helping them keep their star players?
I mean, if... That would bother me more.
They could probably have salary dumped him elsewhere. Probably could have salary dumped him elsewhere anyway.
But, yeah, it would bother me more if we were actually trying this year. Because it's very obvious now that we aren't. And...
But let's say
if Cleveland's going to win, and we know that they're going to win the division because no one else cares enough to try.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is like, when is the first year that we expect that the White Sox will actually expect to be better than 500 or be willing to sign guys who improve the team in a way that isn't marginal?
If you,
right here.
I mean, if you get...
Is that next year?
In the 2021.
2021.
If you get...
Right.
If you get the 80th to 90th percentile outcome on Moncada, and you get the... From over last year, the 60th or 70th percentile on Anderson, and you get the 80th percentile on Eloy, do those three dudes add up to Lindor and Ramirez? Probably. Maybe. Comparable? Ish.
Sorry, you said high outcome on Moncada, high outcome on
Anderson, and high outcome on Eloy.
I mean, I think Eloy plus Moncada high outcomes is equal to Lindor and Ramirez.
I don't know, man. I mean, those dudes were both like 7.5, 8 win players. I don't know if Ramirez keeps that going.
The high end on Eloy and Moncada both of them are MVP candidates.
Okay, so I'll throw in Anderson as the tiebreaker on that or whatever. But then, like, okay, and now you're still three number one, number two starters and a number three starter behind them? Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing, right, it's like what? If things go smoothly, then they have Cheese up at the end of this year, and they have Robert up at the beginning of 20. And they, right. So if a couple of their starting pitchers figure it out this year and Cease makes progress and they have, and Eloy looks really good.
And then Kopech is back in 2020
for next year. Yeah. And then they have Kopech coming up and they figure that a couple of their outfielders graduated. And so then they can go sign another starter and somebody else for 2020.
Like maybe they sign Garrett Cole or something.
I don't know when I would actually see them being not even contending, but a 500 team at this point. Because it's going to take everything breaking right, because I honestly refuse to give them the benefit of the doubt in regards to free agent acquisition.
Well, why would you? Point. Why would you? I mean, that's what drives me insane. If I can, like, pat myself on the back, because even though I'm miserable about it, is that for, like, the last decade, I've basically spent on Twitter, not, like, setting out to criticize the team, but just, like, they'll do stuff. And for years, I've just been like, I don't get this. The upside seems low. It seems too expensive for what they're trying to do. They're stopping short. They're, like, not doing enough. And like... Every single time you get all these people being like, oh, you got to give them a chance. Here's how it could work. You got to believe and blah, 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 blah. It would take a miracle for them to make the playoffs this year. Like, absolute miracle. Like Leicester City winning the Premier League, Angels in the outfield type stuff where like, hey, I guess if Julito Lopez and Rodon all go right back to like what they look like they could be as prospects, and Moncada and Anderson and Eloy all do like MVP style stuff. Like, yeah, okay, sure. Like, yeah, that's the scenario we're talking about. But like in the 95 out of 100 scenarios, 98 out of 100 scenarios where they don't make the playoffs, that's 11 years. So. And they haven't been over 500 since 2012. Like you can disagree with me on individual decisions, but like I'm saying scoreboard at this point. I mean, freaking scoreboard. Can I do that yet, please?
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is that like the first like 5 years of that draught, where it was like largely sort of like churning veterans, it was frustrating not have very many prospects coming in. It was frustrating to write that like all the picks they missed on and all the guys who didn't quite turn out and some of the free agents who didn't go very well. But there is more of a sense at the beginning of the year that they had veterans and that meant something, that every year they were out trying to find guys who'd make the team better. And the thing when you start from like a crappy team and you're relying on internal growth is that, yeah, occasionally it happens and you're the Cubs or the Astros and that shakes out, but they've had a couple of years where they finished behind where they probably should have, and now you're looking at it, and now you start to sound like one of those people that we all make fun of, where you look at the farm system and you're like, well, I got to build a complete team out of this, because when are they going to add somebody who's going to be better than an internal option? And they don't have any intern, right? Like, they don't have, right? They don't have other starters that seem like the right starting pitchers. And are they going to go out and spend for a good starting pitcher? Right? Like, they don't. You know, if you're waiting by the time you actually have a full outfield, you know, if you're not going to go out and get somebody, then by that time, maybe you actually will be running. You know, like, where's Carlos Rodon going to be at that point? And then you need another starter. Anyway, it's like, really facile to say that they need to, that, like, oh, you look at the farm system and you pencil somebody in for every slot. But at this point, it's hard to see without the team emerging sort of like fully cooked internally, it's hard to see when they're going to take a step that makes them materially, right? They need to get to 85 wins before they're going to start buying, it seems like. And I don't see this team, you know, when's this team going to get to 85 wins realistically?
No, I mean, you lose Jose Abreu after this year and who knows how he's going to age. I mean, I love him, but like, you know, and you lose Wellington Castillo after this year. Those are two guys who, you know, credibly and have been top half of the league in their positions, like, multiple times. You lose Nova after this year. And, like, yeah, like, I'm trying to think of teams that graduated, like, fully formed contenders all at once. And I think the 2008 Rays is basically the only one I can think of from, like, nothing. Royals. You know?
The Royals.
Nah, they kind of built their way up to it, and they, I mean, I guess you say maybe they make a trade, because, you know, those Royals traded for Shields, and they traded Greinke for you know, a bunch of guys. I guess you could say they graduated up, you know, Kane and all that stuff. But that Rays team did have Carl Crawford too, so I don't know. I'm trying to see who else they signed. They got Carlos Pena that they signed, who turned into a thing. Traded for Matt Garza. Yeah, I you have to hit on every single prospect, and kind of it felt a little on the nose, like, right after the Machado news broke. It turned out that, you know, Basabe broke his hand and he'll miss 3 months or whatever it is, and it's like, If all these internal options were gonna all hit, I feel like they wouldn't have all been injured already.
It's like trying to win at blackjack without letting yourself be able to hit. So it's like every time it's dealt, you have to be like, nope, this is where I'm at. And it's like, no, you can add, you can make things better. All you have to do is try. It's like, no. This 12's looking real pretty.
Yeah, and like, maybe the dealer busts, but like, you know, like,
right, except it's in this version of blackjack, if the dealer busts, it somehow counts as 10, and like you're standing on 8, right? They, like, the dealer busting is a distinct chance that that's what's happening right now with Cleveland.
Yeah, Lindor, right? Lindor's like, already hurt. So, but if the dealer busts in Cleveland, you wind up with, they wind up winning what, like, you know, 83 games, 85.
Well, you need to knock all their estimates up, because they get to play 19 games against all these teams.
I think the Twins are actually going to be okay. to my chagrin. But and the Twins is kind of funny too. Like they, I mean, if I were a Twins fan, I'd also be like tearing my hair out because.
What have they done this offseason?
They added Scope. They added Cruz. They added.
They extended Kepler and someone else.
Polanco. So they'll get a full season.
Yeah, so like Scope and Cruz are exactly the sort of guys that I was talking about. Where like the White Sox had 5 or 6 years where those are the sorts of guys that they were signing. And on the one hand, like Jonathan Scope ain't winning anybody a title. And on the other hand, like it's a lot more fun to think about that than to worry about like it, right, like than trying to get hyped about Dan. Like, yeah, not even that's unfair to Daniel Polka. Trying to get hype about like. Whichever, like, Adam Engel running back out there again.
But, like, even those 2016 team, like, you know, the Twins' worst positions right now, position players, it's like, okay, you know, Buxton could bust on you. Sano might be cooked, I guess, at age 25. But, like, Jason Castro, CJ Cron, Jonathan Scope, Jorge Polanco, Max Kepler, Nelson Cruz. Like they have a legit major leaguer at every spot. Which is just definitely was not the case with the 2016 White Sox. And yeah, they don't have a Sale. But Berríos and Gibson and Odorizzi, like, I don't know, that's pretty good. Like that's like again.
I wouldn't go that far.
The bullpen, I don't know, these bullpens are weird. I'm sure like I've never heard of Matt McGill. I'm sure he throws 100, but like, that's how bullpens are now. Yeah, that's true. But
probably throws 92.
I just don't understand too. And I saw a couple of people. It was the minority, but I saw a couple of people on Twitter who were like, "Yeah, you know, I wouldn't want to pay that much for Machado." And like, I'm the one who's been arguing that Machado's flawed more than most people heading before this offseason. But like. I just don't see, there's no positive spin here because we're like, oh, well, the farm system could turn out to be like, could produce some real gems. It's like, yeah, that's not mutually exclusive to signing Machado. Like, you could have Machado and that.
Right.
That's the point of a farm is they don't cost anything.
If you're going to crater the payroll, right? It's not like they've been running a $200 million payroll for the last few years where they're saying, oh, this actually is. So by whatever even unreasonable standards you let major league. You know, owner get away with it in budget, but it's not like they've been spending $220 million a year and they're now going in for 1 or 2 years and they're not sure about a huge deal, right? It's like, no, you have all this money. All he does is cost money. Like, I want more good players.
Yeah, and like now if you say, oh, well, if I'm saying, look, you look at next winter, if Arenado extends, which he very well might, it's looking likely.
And why would you sign Arenado if you, like, what?
Right.
Why wouldn't you just... pay a little more for Machado. He fits better with the team.
And it's certain.
Like, he's probably a better player.
And you get certainty on the, you have him now. You don't have to see if the Yankees are in the mood to spend next winter. You don't have to see if the Dodgers decide they want him. It was you and the Padres. It was you and nobody, and now it's you and the Padres. But like, and so there's that. The other elite free agents next winter are like, and again, like you said, I don't know why you would spend next winter if you didn't this one. I guess maybe if you were coming off a 90 loss season instead of 100. But again, you have you don't really have the free agents that fit as well next winter. There's going to be more competition for them. I guess like Cole is kind of interesting. Chris Sale, like I don't see why on earth he'd want to come back.
No more visits to the United States, they promised him.
Yeah. And, The other thing I've been looking at is if you say, well, we're going to ride or die with our guys in-house. Well, yeah, you can trade prospects too, but like giving up talent is never as good as just signing someone, especially when they're in their 20s like Machado and Harper are, because that's the main downside of most free agents. The other thing is, you know, if you're saying, well, we're doing a rebuild, we're going to build from within. You know, when the Cubs were doing that, who's the team that people like to compare them to for the rebuild, they got Chris Bryant. With their draft picks, and the Astros got Correa and Bregman. The White Sox had 4 first-round picks from 2015 to 2017, which is right about, you know, the window of dudes you'd want to be contributing to your next good team. Those guys are Carson Fulmer, Zach Collins, Zach Birdie, and Jake Berger. Fulmer's already a reliever and might be a bad one at that. Zach Collins... like can't hit for contact in double A and probably can't catch. Zach Birdie had Tommy John. He used to throw 100. So far, he only throws like 94, 95.
Oh, no, hell, Zach Birdie the whole time, his ceiling was closer.
Right. Yeah, and he had a low ceiling to begin with. Jake Birdie.
Right, and nobody thought he was going to be like Craig Kimbrell as a closer, right?
No. It was no, I mean, he was probably more like a, maybe like a Knable, like a really nice, like that was plausible. Like he was a really nice relief prospect, I think. I mean, such as they
I mean, the other thing that's weird about that is that you're rattling off a bunch of guys who went between 10 and 30, and like, it, you know, it sucks that they didn't hit on any of them, and it has had deleterious effects on the rebuild. But, right, the bizarrely given like how all this shook out, right, is this is somehow only the, like, given that this feels like it's been going on forever, right, we've only had two seasons after the fire sale, and one of those they hadn't actually finished tearing the team down yet, and so they didn't get that good a draft pick, right? Well, and so like Madrigal is the first one, right, if you're talking about Bryan and Correa and Bregman and Baez, right, like the only, I guess Baez is a little bit lower, right? But like the, you know, Madrigal is the first one who falls into that category.
Yeah,
and
well,
maybe he's not going to be here for 2 or 3 more years.
Well, I mean, I'm going to stop you there too, because part of the reason it feels like it's gone on so long is because they've sucked for a while, and they had the number 3 pick in 2014. They got Carlos Rodon, who is now like. Like, I don't know, if you didn't get Machado or Harper, the windows push back like another year at least. And Rodon is, I don't know, when's he coming up for free agency? Let me 2022.
It's 2 more years, right? Oh.
So he's
3 more years.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's got, I think he goes to ARB in 2020. Or no, I think he was ARB eligible this year.
I think so.
So he's got 2020 and 2021. But what I'm saying is, like, he was your first top 5 pick because they've been rebuilding this whole time.
Yeah. No, that's very fair. And then, I mean, the other thing is, like, they...
And you can say, yeah, I mean, obviously you can do this with any draft. You can look at guys who went after him. But, like, you scouted Carson Fulmer and you decided he was on that Vanderbilt team. You decided you wanted him more than Walker Buehler. So... You know, great job. And then you look at, yeah, like Zach Collins was at 10, and it wasn't a great draft, but Alex Kirilov, Forrest Whitley, and Matt Tice, and Blake Rutherford, who you apparently liked enough to trade for anyway, so we're all behind him. And then, you know, you took Jake Berger to, like, it's not impossible to get good players at that spot. And you might, and it's not just that you might not get stars, like, you might get two, like, seventh inning dudes or worse. And like, I would say the reasonable outcome for that grouping right now is like one solid setup man, one bad setup man, and two mediocre first basemen. Like, I think that's the most realistic outcome for that group of 4 first round picks. Like, that sucks.
Not great.
So,
in the interest of ending this podcast on a slightly positive note, what are people excited about for this season?
I'm excited that I can actually go to White Sox games on a regular basis for the first time. And I don't remember how long, like,
your entire life.
No, I grew up in the Southwest Burbs. My family always had weekend season tickets.
You grew up in St. Louis, as far as I can tell.
I'm not Ryan.
Generally, it's not a real place.
I'm not editing this podcast, so be very careful. I mean, don't buy all your tickets secondhand out of protest.
Well, I'm going to.
So you're from Joliet. I'm trying to see.
I'm not from Joliet. I am from Plainfield.
How far is that from Elmhurst?
Not really close.
An hour.
Oh, all right. Oh, yeah, Plainfield's out there.
It is out there.
Okay, sorry. I'm not going to learn Chicago suburb geography on the air for you guys. I'm sure, like, most of our listeners know it way better than me and are like, what the hell is with this guy? For this year, I mean, I'm excited about Eloy. I still think I think this is the year we'll learn all the stuff that we should have learned last year but didn't, because Moncada needed a lot more looks than I thought. Rodon isn't coming off of surgery. This is kind of the make or break year for Giolito with this team. I'm interested to see if Lopez can build on some of the stuff he did at the end of last year. The bullpen should be good. I'm curious to see. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see sort of the next wave of guys. There, some of them are guys that I've been following for a while who I don't think of as impact players, but I'm, you know, kind of thought they might, you know.
Who's actually going to be in the bigs from that?
So, like I said, none of these guys are super exciting names. Like Spencer Adams and Jordan Stevens are dudes that I'm like have been kind of interested in. And if either of them can be, you know, useful, that could. Man, there was a Spencer Adams who played in the 20s, and it always throws me off on Baseball Reference.
Wait, there was a man named Spencer in the 1920s?
Yeah, he must have known
Urban. Are we sure this wasn't a time traveler?
Yeah. Well, he might have been named for the poet.
Was it with an S?
No.
Sorry, two S's?
No. I don't know. I'm looking at this like, people love Polka, and I get why he's fun, but I just don't, you know. Can he get to being a 40 outfielder instead of like a 30 outfielder? Like, I don't know. Man, I'm not sure. Hamilton and Burr are fun. Mark,
because like my challenge sitting here in February is that like I feel like all of the White Sox prospects except for Alloy are either not threatening to be contributors to the big league club in 2020 or are, and prospects, I mean, loosely speaking, or they're post hype where like it's, you know, I remain very excited about what I've seen Moncada do. I think there's still a chance he hits his potential. And I think if he does, he will be the most exciting, like if he hit the potential that he could, he would be, I think, the most exciting White Sox player of my like adult life. But
not counting Sale, point, I guess.
I find his brand like if he is a
dynamic athlete, you know, position player, yeah, is like
right. If he is a 6-win second baseman who is like, you know, one of the best base runners in baseball. And like hits for pop and is handsome and plays every day and right like
switch
I
hitter.
Don't know, I'm,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, like he's got anyway. Like that's more upside as a package than Sale. I love Sale. I love Q. But like part of it is like what I like about baseball, where like bizarrely, I think base running is like maybe my favorite part of baseball.
Oh, interesting. Because like rookie year Abreu is about as is also up there.
Yeah. So like, but my point is like Moncada's got that potential, and Alloy does too, but to not quite the same degree. But it's mostly, I feel like Alloy there, it's mostly downside insofar as like he's got to come up and rake, and to be quite as excited about him. And there's just too much of a taste of all the service games.
Yeah.
And then you have all these guys where I will be excited if one of them picks it up and is better, but I'm not going to be, it's not watching a Lopez start or a Giolito start or lining up the Moncada at bats or whatever, because I don't feel like I'm going to get, I feel like I'm going to be reaching too much in like getting excited about any one of those things.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, there's, if Tim Anderson defends like he did last year and hits even 10% better, that's a really good player. Moncada breakout would be huge, and it'd be really fun to have a Moncada and Anderson breakout. Like that'd be really fun, like style, you know, like you said, aesthetically Anderson and Moncada play like could have like a really cool skill set if they can actualize it. There's other like arms that I think could filter up in the second half. Obviously you mentioned Cease. He might do the Kopech thing this year, hopefully without the surgery. There's even dudes like Jimmy Lambert that I kind of like, who you could wind up seeing the second half, who are all like, you know, it's a type of thing where if this team is generating fourth and fifth starters internally instead of trading for James Shields, that's like, you know, definitely a better situation than they used to be in. Yeah, I mean, there's always stuff to watch for.
I guess for me, it's hard for me to single out one thing where I feel like there's, where I can point to it, and I'm not sort of saying like, well, there's 20 different things that are eight things that have a 30% chance of happening, and I'll just be like, I know I will be excited about whichever of those like 2.4 things happen, but
I like Jose Rondon. Today, I'm throwing that out there too.
Sitting here today, it's hard for me to point out and say, like, you know, they have a bunch of guys where if they do well, I'll be very happy because they're fun. And probably a couple of those guys will do well. But there's nobody where I'm looking at it and saying, I'm confident that, like, this is going to be a person who's going to make me want to tune in June.
Yeah. I mean, so much of it's going to be.
Ella is the only one. And as I said, at this point, I almost, like, it has taken a lot of the excitement out, the fact that they haven't built around him and that they've let him get, like, he's not, right, like, I think it's most fun when prospects get called up when they're kind of al dente, and, like, he's not.
Well, yeah, I think it's part of what's so frustrating is even if they were in the exact same position in terms of talent they brought in from the outside, like, if they'd brought Eloy up in September, and let's say he'd hit well, and you say, okay, great, like, he doesn't need, like, much of an adjustment period against major league pitching, and we can get excited for that coming into this year instead of him coming up and seeing, you know, 100 for the first time, like, regularly. Or, you know, if they had just, like I said, if San Diego had just signed Machado for 10-300, like, out of the gate, and the Phillies had just signed Harper in, like, November, and you're like, oh, well, they got scooped up by other teams. Like, that's about what I'm used to as a White Sox fan. And maybe they had added, like, one of those plus infielders on it. You know, maybe they had added Jed Lowry, right, to, like, play third base. Somebody where it's like, oh, yeah, like, he's, like a good player that I, you know, I'm going to enjoy watching him play instead of, you know, those at-bats going to the Nick Delmonico's of the world, maybe. I know they don't play the same position, but I think you take my point. Like, coming into this year, I'd be feeling a lot less grim, and maybe it's my attitude, but, like, right now when I think of Eloy, one of the big things I think about is just being irritated at the organization. And now, you know, they're coming in and the new faces are, you know, I'm sure Nova is going to bother me less than James Shields did because they didn't trade Tatis for him and he's, like, a little bit better. And, like, I'm sure Alonso is going to have more professional, is going to, like, get on base more than Matt Davidson did. But, like, I enjoyed Matt Davidson. He was, like, my guy, and it was interesting. So I don't know. It's not only is this a team that's been awful for a long time, they now look like they're going to be decidedly awful again. And the way they got there was as irritating as it could possibly be. So there's still time. Like, they could still add Adam Jones and Joe Gonzalez and give me some players that, you know, like, I just enjoy and who are going to make the team. Like, I do think there is a material difference between a high 70s win team and a 60s wins team. Like, that's just, there's just a difference watching that every day. Like, feeling like you have a coin flip chance of winning a game is just, it's just more fun instead of it being like,
I mean,
we're going to need, it's only 10 or 15 games over the course of 162, but, like, I think it's a mental difference where it's not like, oh man, half of this lineup is like sub replacement level. So if the good hitters don't have a good game, or you don't have one of those random Matt Davidson going nuts against Kansas City, like, we don't stand a chance. And that's just like, that's like a death march. That sucks.
Right. I mean, it's like if it's 10 wins over the course of the season and you watch half the games, that's an extra win every month. And also it's probably an extra game or two that you don't turn off in the fourth inning.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, I mean, like Joe Gonzalez is much is less likely to get blown out in, than Dylan Covey in the first inning. Like he's just he's shown like a major league skill set, and so if like even if they lose those games like 6-4 instead of 8-2, I mean that's still a lot more fun to watch because then you know you have like you said you can watch that all the way through and they'll have a chance to win.
Watson, just 70 and 92 feels so much less soul crushing than 62 and 100. It's like it's only a difference of 8 wins. It really doesn't mean anything, but it's one of those where it's so absolutely soul crushing at the end of the year to just be like, hey, lost another 100 games, and it's like, neat.
Yeah.
But I
Yeah.
looked it up, by the way, and Albert Bell's contract, what it would be worth today, still wouldn't crack 100 mil.
Really? Is that just
Yeah.
with
What do you
if,
mean, what it would be worth today?
you mean inflation?
if you do like an inflation adjustment for his 55 million, it would be 85 million.
I wonder what it'd be
Well,
like if.
that's not baseball inflation.
I know, but it's still just like one of
Yeah.
those, oh, God damn it kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's still time in this offseason to like make improvements on this roster, certainly.
Shy of signing Bryce, it kind of feels like, well, this was a lost offseason.
Oh, it definitely does. One of the other ideas that I was kind of like kicking around, because I'm just like, what else are they going to do with all this like payroll flexibility that they're just not going to use? And I was thinking like, you know, the Yankees are in a position where they're probably desperately trying to shed money. And I'm like, well, what, I wonder, like, maybe you could buy another prospect for, you know, taking on Ellsbury's salary. You know, like, you know, he's a guy where, you know, I don't really know what he has left in the tank. If anything, I don't really care. But if they send you Clint Frazier, to take on Ellsbury's contract, I mean, that seems fine with me. Like, what would Clint
Would
Frazier
they
do?
do that?
I don't know. I mean, all I can do, Frank, is I've spent the last 10 years saying what they should do. They mostly haven't done it, and they've mostly sucked. So, you know.
Mean, I feel like all they're going to do with this position, this payroll flexibility, is just go further Fafnir with it and just keep hoarding and hoarding and getting more and more toxic and not do anything.
Apparently, Rick Hahn says it's not about money. Okay.
Is that like that's one of those things you can't tell if you're telling on if they're telling on themselves or not. Well, like, it's not like Machado grew up a Padres fan and he's coming back to them, and it's not like he has a pre-existing tie to the organization. And they're the Padres; they're like the White Sox of the West, and you couldn't even beat them out.
And like, how is it not about money? He signed for the most money. What? And if you're saying it's not about money, are you saying it's because he doesn't want to he doesn't want to play on your team? Why doesn't he want to play on your team? What did you do to make this team so
Yeah, that's
undesirable?
exactly my point.
Like, you all right? So you're saying that you've created. Oh no! It's not that we don't want to offer him money. It's that nobody wants to play here because it sucks here. What? That doesn't get you off the hook at all. There's no positive spin here at all. The only way this isn't a complete and utter disaster if they turn around and sign Harper like tomorrow. But that's how I feel about it. I mean, Frank, hopefully we've spoken Moncada and Eloy MVP candidates into existence, so. I'm gonna wrap it up on that cheery note, unless you two have anything else to add.
I'm pretty good.
Frank?
Nothing. As I posted in Slack, I couldn't tell if me having a grumpy day at work is a reaction to the Machado news, or if my bad reaction to the Machado news is because I had a grumpy day at work. But it's been a real nihilistic kind of day, so.
Yeah, I had a really grim afternoon. I'm kind of embarrassed at how like upsetting it, but it's just one of those things where it's like just confirmation that no, the team that I root for is just has no willingness to do what's necessary.
Left
And
back.
yeah, like you said, if the Mark, like the planets aligned here, and even then they still fumbled it out of bounds, and like it's kind of like fumbling. You know that rule in the NFL where you fumble in your opponent's end zone and like becomes a touchback for their team? Like it feels kind of like that, where it's like, oh man, all you had to do was not that, and they managed to shoot the moon and pull it off anyway. But you know, at least Pakoda says the Cubs will be in last, so we got that. Got that going for us. And
I feel like it's weird for you to say that, given that you don't have like an ancestral need to hate Cubs fans.
I don't. It's not ancestral.
Also, is this still on air?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not ancestral. It was acquired. Anyway, thanks guys. Thanks for joining me for this sort of therapy session. Hopefully we they do something else for us to talk about. Like if they did sign Joe Gonzalez, at least I would, you know, that's two confirmed major league pitchers in the rotation instead of one. So, we'll go from there.
Rodon is a confirmed major league pitcher.
Oof. I don't know, man. Shoulder surgery. We'll see. I think DRA really hated him last year, so his strikeout rate just like absolutely vanished. So, you know, you take a guy who doesn't pitch for ages and then gets shoulder surgery and then is quite bad by the best pitching metric. It gives me great pause, I'll put it that way.
You know who else has great paws?
Chekhov?
Maya.
Oh.
Okay.
He's bringing it full circle there.
Nice. Well, yeah, that's true. No matter what the White Sox do, our pets are awesome. Anyway, thanks so much, guys. We'll talk again soon, hopefully on a happier day.